Baruch Hashem. Today is Netzach Shabbahot. Okay. Tonight is Lag Bomer. So today we have, for your learning pleasure, the Sefer Butzina D'Oraisa from the Tolna Rebbe, Shlita. Okay, I just sent you a PDF in the chat, if anyone wants to hang on to a copy of it. But you have it on the screen in front of you also. So we'll learn his first mimer. And the mimer is called Bar Yochai Moshav Tov Yashavta. And he asks a very simple question to begin. B'zemer Bar Yochai, Nemar Bar Yochai Moshav Tov Yashavta. We sing in the song, the famous beautiful song of Rabbi Shimon. We say, Bar Yochai, you sat in a Moshav Tov. You sat in a good dwelling place. In a good dwelling place. Yom nasta yom asher barachta b'mara surim shamadata sham kanisa hotcha v'adarecha. You ran off to live in a mara surim, to live in between the rocks of the cave. And yet, we describe it as a moshav tov. So the Talmud Rebbe says, I want to ask a simple question, and it resonates with us, having spent a lot of time indoors recently. V'yesh lahavin inyan oso mara surim. I want to try to understand the nature of this cave, Hamuskeres Pepizmon, Shaisa Mara Chashucha, it was a dark cave, Shalo Hayaba Ma'uma, Lo Mibachina Gashmis, Lo Mibachina Ruchnis, Rabbi Shimon didn't have food, Rabbi Shimon didn't have Svarim, Rabbi Shimon had Rabbi Shimon and his son. Right? The Gemara in Shabbos, Aflam and Gilmel, tells us that Rabbi Shimon and his son, running from the Romans, Roman persecution, they ran off to the cave. The mamish kemat had nothing to eat. Lo mi b'china gashmis, shelo hayaba achila, ela ach v'rach haruvim. They had nothing to eat, says the Gemara, except for what? Except for carob. They had a carob tree. They had a spring of water. There was no coffee. There was no orange juice. There was no soda. There was no bread. There was nothing. There was no man. They had nothing other than carob and water. Shaleim kosef harambam bilchos deos dilei, as the Rambam writes, in his Hilchos Deos, when the Rambam gives us advice about different types of practices, health practices, the Rambam says, "Hacharuvim ra'im la'olam." Carob is not a great way. If you have to get stuck on an island or stuck in a cave with one food item, carob is definitely not the way to go. And Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi and his son Rabbi Elazar, they didn't have clothing. They didn't have proper clothing to wear. They had one set of clothing that they constantly changed out of because they didn't want to wear it out. They sat in the chol, they sat in the sand, which pierced their skin, which tore at their skin. They would sit buried in their necks, up to their necks in sand, because they didn't want their clothing to be worn out. They needed to save it for davening when they would use their clothing. Haruach, the draft in the cave. Right, there was water dripping when there was snow outside. And if that was all true in a physical sense, you'll say, well, spiritually it was the greatest place in the world. Not necessarily. Lo sefer Torah, likro bo b'sheni v'chamishi. They didn't have a sefer Torah to lay in on Monday and Thursday. Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos, Yom Tov. Rabbi Shimon and his son were in their cave for over a decade. So picture it. What was it like? You know? Never going to shul. They didn't have a sefer Torah. What were the Yom Tovim like in the cave? Again, years in the cave. Years and years and years in the cave. 12 years and then a 13th year in the cave. V'lo chaveirim makshivim. Rabbi Shimon, who had so much Torah to share, he didn't have a base medrash. He had his son, of course, his one chavrusa. But he didn't have friends to converse in Torah with. She'efshar lilmod imahem ulalamdam. To learn from and to teach them. Lo minyan letfilos. He had no one to daven with. Lo yain lekiddush la'avdala. I mean, what the Tolna Rebbe is painting here is a picture of something that's very painful. He didn't have a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. He didn't have matzah on Pesach. He didn't have a sukkah on Sukkos. I mean, when you actually think about it in these terms for a minute, what was so great about life in the cave? U'lechora ha'yitzarech lomar bar yochai moshav lo tov yashavta. It would be more appropriate to sing tonight, bar yochai. What a terrible cave you sat in. And you know, you made the most of it. But to call it a moshav tov, what was so tov about it? It's a very geshmak question. And again, I like the way that the Tolna Rebbe Shlita paints the picture for us. Again, when you get into the details, you actually think about it. What did he do? What was the Pesach Seder like in the cave? What was Sukkos like in the cave? no minyan, no sefer Torah, no lulav, no esrog. Did Rishon even have his tefillin? Did he have his tefillin with him? Right? And yet, what do we sing in this beautiful tefillah Bar Yochai? V'afal pichein, in that moshav, seemingly lo tov yashavta, we say, Shom kanisa hod chavadarecha. It was there that you acquired your hod and your hadar. It was there that you acquired your beauty and your splendor. Something transformative, of course, took place in that very dark cave. Lahoros she'afal pi she'yashav b'moshav she'eino tov, even though he sat in a cave which on a physical level and even on a spiritual level was really not that good, something really good came out of it. Afal pichein kono hodo v'hadro, he acquired his hod v'hadar, ulikros lamara surim zem moshav tov, that we could call this rocky cave, we can call it a moshav tov. Ulichora davar tema, we need to understand exactly how that works and why that is. Okay, this is the opening question of the Tolna Rebbe in the Sefer Butzina d'Oraisa on Lag Ba'Omer and Shavuos. So he continues by quoting Gemara in Bava Basra. There's a famous discussion, it's a famous sugya in Bava Basra, the Niska d'Rabbi Abba. What is the story of the Niska d'Rabbi Abba? V'nira levaras kavanas bala zemer, perhaps we could explain the words of the beautiful Pizmon of Lag Ba'Omer of Bar Yochai, based on a yesod that comes out of the Gemara in Bava Basra, Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis. And it's not a yesod really in Lamdis about the sugya of what happened with the Niska d'Rabbi Abba. Niska means like a piece of metal. Two guys were fighting over a bar of metal, over a block of silver. Sham Ayri Odos Niska d'Rabbi Abba. Right, the Gemara talks about the story, the Niska of Rabbi Abba. What was the Niska of Rabbi Abba? Hainu chaticha shel kesef sheravu alea beiz b'nei adam. It was a block of silver the two guys fought over. The Gemara there is talking about in Yanei Chazaka, right, and questions of taking a shvua, and questions of ownership. So the Gemara discusses, you know, several cases of people who either owned the piece of land and someone else said it was my land, or someone had an object in their hand and someone else grabbed the metal item out of his hand and claimed that it was his, right? And it's a question of, well, what do we know about prior ownership? What do we know about Chazaka? When do we assign a person to take a shvua? What is the status of one witness or more than one witness? So these two fellows are fighting over this piece of metal. And they came before Rabbi Abba, ve'echriyaz dina shaloso niska, and Rabbi Abba paskind on this cast metal. Okay. V'lashana gemara sham hi, v'hainu niska d'Rabbi Abba. The Gemara is comparing several cases, and it says, oh, this case, maybe we can solve this from the case, from the niska d'Rabbi Abba, from Rabbi Abba's niska. However, what's the problem with the Gemara calling it Rabbi Abba's niska? Neither of the two Balei Dinim who were fighting in this case, neither one held that the piece of metal belonged to Rabbi Abba. Right? Zeh Omer that the Niska is mine. Zeh Omer that the Niska is mine. Rabbi Abba was the judge. Rabbi Abba was the posek. Right? How did it become, in history, and it's a famous sugya, how did it become that the sugya is known, the conversation, the discussion is known as the Niska de Rabbi Abba? It was Rabbi Abba's Niska. He didn't walk away with it at the end of the day. V'lashon ha-gemara sham, that hainu Niska d'Rabbi Abba, yesh lahavin. My time ha-amru Niska d'Rabbi Abba. Why do we call it the Niska of Rabbi Abba? V'halo osa Niska lo ha'izas Rabbi Abba. It didn't belong to him at all. It was two people who were fighting over something valuable in front of Rabbi Abba. Elishal echad mei bali adina. It belonged to one of the two litigants in the case. Why don't we call it the Niska which Rabbi Abba paskind about? The Niska that was debated before Rabbi Abba. Why are we calling it the Niska of Rabbi Abba? As if he was the one, more than anyone, who actually owned the piece of metal. So he explains with a Maisa about a great tzaddik and a great posek, Rav Yeshua of Kutna. Rav Yeshua Mikutna, Rav Sheila Trunk, his last name was Trunk, I believe. Rav Yeshua of Kutna, the following story occurred in front of him one time. Shepam achas bo ledon lefano beiz balei dinim, shenechleku al bailus karka misuyames. However, this is a great story, it's a famous story. There were two fellows who were fighting once about a piece of land in front of Rav Yeshua of Kutna. Again, this one claimed it belonged to him, this one claimed it belonged to him. Rabbi Yeshua Yatzal Lios Vemed Devar Mamurim. So Rabbi Yeshua from Kutna, his farmer called Yeshua Smalko, he went out to try to figure out what's going on here. Ukamuvan Chabez Baliadin Harimu Kolam Zel Zevachol Echad Zaak Shadama Hazu Shalohi. And each one was screaming and saying, no, this piece of land belongs to me. The other one said, no, this piece of land belongs to me. And they're fighting and they're going back and forth and they're arguing, they're screaming. And Rabbi Shula comes out to try to solve this situation. And all of a sudden, these two fellows, as they're screaming at each other, in the presence of Yeshua, who's kind of just trying to hear what's happening on both sides of the case, all of a sudden, Yeshua bends down to the ground, and he puts his ear against the ground, as if he's trying to listen to the ground. So one of the two fellows stopped fighting. They got quiet, and they were wondering what exactly is Yeshua's Malko doing. Amr lahem, Rav Yeshua, Shamati, I heard from you, Shekol Echad Mikem Zok Shadama Shalohi. Each one says the land is mine. This one says the land is mine. This one says the land is mine. So I decided to ask the land, Nu, what do you say? Alkein, Hiskofti, Lishol, Asadama, Atzma, Madait Alkach. So I went down to ask the ground, Nu, what do you say? Which one of these guys owns you? And when I bent down to the ground to listen to what the ground had to say, I heard that the ground said, Sheshnechem Sheichem La. Both of them actually belong to me. In other words, one day these two fellows are both going to die, and they're going to take up their eternal resting spot, at least in this world, within me. So each one thinks that they own me, but the truth is, at the end of the day, I own them both. It's a very, very powerful story, and needless to say, they got the message very quickly. So what's the point of this story? What's the lesson in this story? Sometimes we get so caught up in the happenings of this world that we forget that you know, like the Gemara says, Ein Tzur Kelokeinu, there's no rock like our God. So the Gemara says in Megillah, Ein Tzayar Kelokeinu, there's no craftsman like our God. And one of the explanations is that when we create things, our creations outlive us. If you make a painting, there's a good chance that that painting is going to stick around longer than you are. If you fashion a beautiful wooden chair, there's a good chance that that's going to stick around longer than you are. If you write an amazing essay, right, that your ideas are accepted in the world, well, you're going to be long gone and people might still be reading your words. Right? So, Ein Tzur Kelokeinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only creator who outlives his creations. But many of the things that we create, the things that we build, the things that we do in this world, right, the inanimate objects that we're involved with in this world actually have a better chance of lasting than we do. This world is a world that's fleeting. So when a person says, this belongs to me, this is mine, I earned it, I built it, I created it. Even if you win the court case and you walk away with the item, the disputed item, but it's nothing really more than a loan. It's being given to you for a short period of time until life runs its course, when time runs out. When a person reaches that age, 70, 80, whatever it is, 120, when they're no longer. And then he goes back to the earth until Mashiach comes. Yanon is one of the names of Mashiach. So says the Tolna Rebbe, and it's a really big mussar. When we see life in very broad strokes, instead of sort of like, you know, what's happening this week, or what's happening this year, or what's happening in my lifetime, but if I zoom out just a little bit and I picture myself within the context of hundreds of years or thousands of years, bevadai shekol adam shayach la'adama. For all the land that humans have owned and all the land that's exchanged hands throughout history, the earth has much more of the upper hand over us as human beings than we have over it. Har beyoser me'asher adama shayach la'adam. We're more shayach to the earth. We're more its possessions than it is our possession. And that's Rabbi Yeshua of Kutna was saying to those two individuals who were fighting, who were so lost in their land dispute. You're screaming at each other, you're yelling at each other, you're fighting over something which you both think is yours, and you're both wrong. You're fighting over a fleeting thing in a world in a world that's temporal, in a world that cannot last. So now, let's go back to Rabbi Abba. Niska de Rabbi Abba. However, why does the Gemara call it the Niska de Rabbi Abba? It wasn't Rabbi Abba's Niska. He was not the one who walked away with that valuable piece of metal at the end of the Machlokas. He was just the posek. He was just the dayan. V'kachu adavar gam b'inyan Niska de Rabbi Abba. Dihinei osam ha'anoshim shiz dayinu al osin Niska. Those two fellows who were fighting over, they had that monetary dispute. Ein anu yod mihem u'ma hayu ma'aseh. We don't know who they are. We don't know their names. We don't know how rich they were, how powerful they were, how successful they were. We don't know anything about these guys. What remained from that dispute? What remained is an important psak halacha in Bava Basra, Daf Lamed Gimel. And a tzaddik whose name was Rabbi Abba, who said a chiddush in that case. We don't know who these fellows are. They mean nothing to us. Kilo noisim mehem shum zecher. There's no remnant of them. We don't remember anything about them. V'hayom hazeh achar yoisir me'elef shana ein adam ba'olam hayodeya v'zecher es osam anashim. Shebavada hayonashim chashuvim v'ashirim balei nischa. They were obviously very wealthy people. They were fighting over a hefty sum. And yet we know nothing about them. These guys who probably were big shots in their shul, in their community, the people who were powerful, important, were well respected. People would flatter them because of their wealth, because of their authority, and they're nobodies now. Ushamam nishkach meilev. Their names are forgotten. Their life's legacies are forgotten. We don't know anything about them. Vinelmu b'tahom, and they're lost in the depths. V'ilu as Rabbi Abba, but Rabbi Abba himself, who is mechadesh his big chiddush about what the halacha is in the case of this niska, mitoch she'eno yachol yishav mishalem, if you're in a situation where you're not able to take a shvua, then you're obligated to pay, and all the Torah of all the great Rashi Yeshiva throughout history, and all the lumdus, and all the insight that came out of that psak, right? Rabbi Abba we know, and the Gemara in Bava Basra we know. He's the one who got his plaque hung up at the end of the day. It says, niska de Rabbi Abba. It's called Tzurav Midrabanan Makir V'Yodeya. Right? Every young Talmudic scholar who learns Bava Basra analyzes this sugya and spends a lot of time talking about Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Abba. No one's talking about these two guys who are fighting over this sum of money. Nimtza Lefizek Ki Be'emes Haniska Haisa Be'etzem Shal Rabbi Abba. So Chever, what's the chiddush of the Talmud Rebbe? At the end of the day, whose niska was it really? It's like Rav Shia LeKutna was saying to these two fellows fighting over this piece of earth. You think you own it, but it owns you. Rabbi Abba was the one whose legacy was made over a valuable piece of metal that he himself didn't walk away with. But he was the one who really won the case. Ki hu zocha al yod lechadesh es chidusho sheyamod liyamim rabim tzof kol adoros. He said a chiddush in Torah which will last for all generations. In so many yeshivas for generations, lamdu v'hagu b'chidusha Rabbi Abba were busy trying to analyze and to make sense of Rabbi Abba's chiddush regarding that cast metal. Nimtza sha'oisa ha'niska ha'isa be'emes niska to Rabbi Abba. So sof kol sof, it really was the niska of Rabbi Abba. And the two fellows who were fighting over it, they were not the winners of the court case. Continues the Talmud Rebbe, the Ibn Ezra, another example of this yesod. Yadua mashakosav Ibn Ezra b'shirav odos mazlo hara. The Ibn Ezra, Rabbi Avram ben Ezra, known to us as the Ibn Ezra, one of the great, great commentaries of Torah. I remember, I always think of the Ibn Ezra in the context of a flight I took to Eretz Yisrael one time, and I was sitting next to this Hasidish guy. And he was learning. He was learning Shnai Mikra from a little Mikra's Gedolos Chumash, and he came across an Ibn Ezra that he was so excited to show me. And I started thinking, just historically, what would it be like for this Chassid to meet the Ibn Ezra? The Ibn Ezra was a very worldly person. He obviously lived very different and looked very different than the. But the way that this Chassid was describing the Chashivas of the Ibn Ezra, right? And just like, wow, look at this shot from the Ibn Ezra. I was just wondering, what would it look like if the Ibn Ezra walked into this guy's shtiebel on Shabbos, Would they even give him an aliyah? I'd like to hope that they would. But the Ibn Ezra was a great Torah scholar, a great grammarian, a great poet. and he wrote many songs. And he writes, he was a poor person, and one of his songs, he writes a very, very sad thing. He writes, he's describing, he must be comparing himself to some chashuv person who lived in his neighborhood, some wealthy individual. I'm not sure if the fellow is Jewish or not Jewish. And he says, Ashkim lebeis hasar. Right, I get up early to go to the house of this tsar, this officer, this nobleman. Omrim kvar rachav. Again, I'm not even sure exactly what he's referencing in all of these words. But the line that Tolna Rebbe is going to speak about is sort of Ibn Ezra, you know, kind of like showing up at this wealthy person's door and always feeling second class to his rich neighbor. Always feeling that he had less than the guy next door. And the Ibn Ezra laments the fact, Oya le'ish ani noilad b'li kochav. He says, woe to the person who was born without a star. Who was born, you know, when the stars weren't aligned properly when he came into this world. My neighbor, or whoever this fellow was, this tsar, this officer, this nobleman, right? A person of means, a person who had transportation, and had nice clothing, and had nice food in his home, right? And the Ibn Ezra says, you know, kind of woe to me, right? As I look over at my neighbor, who has clothing and has rachav and shachav, right? But woe to me that I was born without a kochav. I was born without a star. I don't have any mazel. The Ibn Ezra was writing a very honest poem, which we have, which apparently we have. Again, I don't have the collected songs of the Ibn Ezra, so I'm not really sure the full context of where the Ibn Ezra writes this. Right? But woe to the person who was born without the stars aligned in his favor. Now, Chavra, I go back to that flight to Eretz Yisrael. I'm sitting next to this chassid. Or I walk into any yeshiva in the world. I walk into any Jewish home and I pick up a chumash off the shelf. And there, printed on the page, are the eternal words of Ibn Ezra. Who was this tsar? Who was this neighbor? I'm sure we could find out. I'm sure if we ask the historians, I'm sure if we study the writings of the Ibn Ezra, I'm sure there's some scholar, some academic in the world who could tell us who this was and what the context of this beautiful poem, this very sad but beautiful poem, was written about. But to the average person, we don't know who this guy is and we don't care who this guy is. Hine oso hasar sha'alav kiven Ibn Ezra's dvarav, bevada had the gadol mafursim ma'od biyamav. I'm sure in his day, in his time, he was very, very chashuv. He must have been very, very important. Ulu maso Ibn Ezra haya ish ani v'chashuv atma shenolad b'li kochav. The Ibn Ezra sitting there, analyzing the Bible, writing his commentary on the Chumash, a poor person, a person who seems to not have much mazel. He had some very difficult times in his life. And again, he's writing a very heartfelt poem expressing his frustration of being born to, you know, an unlucky, being born under an unlucky mazel. Amnam kayom hazeh achar yosur, mites meos shana, but after 900 plus years since the patira of the Ibn Ezra, anu yodim es ha'emes, now we know the truth, shedafke Ibn Ezra hu zeh shenoladim kochav, the Ibn Ezra was the one who was born under his lucky stars, so to speak. He was born with great mazel. It would take some time for it to emerge, for the world to recognize. Vilu oso saru moshe nolad b'li kochav. And that sar, while he may have been able to put nicer food on his table and to have some custom-made suits and shoes, and maybe he drove a fancy car and lived in a big house, but again, if you just zoom out and you see it over the course of centuries, you see it over the course of thousands of years, right? We know that Ibn Ezra is here forever. And as time goes on, less and less will be known about that tsar. He'll be forgotten. Maybe a footnote in some scholarly work about the Ibn Ezra. Sharei kayoma ze ein misha zocher makir soso tsar. We don't know, we don't care who that officer was, who that nobleman was, who that chashuv and wealthy individual was. Ki miyad acher sha'oso asar siyem es mechsas yamav v'shanav, shekavalo Hashem yizbarach v'nitman ba'afra, as soon as his time ran out and he was buried in the dirt, Shemo Nishkach Mikol Lev. Maybe they knew about him in that town, in that particular place of the world, for a period of time, but as time goes on, he's less and less important. And as time and time goes on, we see the impact of the Ibn Ezra, and he grows more and more important. Ulumaso Chacham Ibn Ezra, Ein Lecha Adam Yisrael, Shein Yodeyas Shemo. There's no one in the world, there's no Jew in the world, right, who has any shaykhs to Torah, who hasn't heard the name of Rabbi Abba ben Ezra, Ibn Ezra. Everyone knows who he is. And we're still studying his Torah. So who is the one who was born, so to speak, under a good masa? He tells a beautiful story about the Pnei Menachem. The Tolna Rebbe had a close relationship with the sixth Ger Rebbe, the Pnei Menachem, who was Rebbe of Ger for a relatively short period of time. And the Holy Pnei Menachem Art School just put out a new sefer, a new book, on the Pnei Menachem, which I'm excited to pick up a copy of and read. The Pnei Menachem, he said, one time I traveled to Pnei Menachem to be Menachem Avel. Kishenasa Lenachem Av, Shikul Albito Akatana. He went to be Menachem Avel to pay a shiva call to a father who was bereft of his young daughter, Rachman Litzlan. A man lost his daughter. V'amr Shama Pnei Menachem Benichum Avelam, and as a way of trying to comfort this fellow, the Pnei Menachem told this father, sitting there mourning the loss of his young daughter, he told him the following mashal. And Chaver, if you remember this mashal, it could take you very far in life. Mashal l'ma'adavar doma, said the sixth Ger Rebbe. A mashal l'ma'adavar doma. La'adam sheme'odo lo ra'a bank v'lo shama odosav. Imagine a person who never heard of a bank, never went to a bank, doesn't know how a bank works. And one day he happens to stumble into a bank. And he's observing what he sees before his eyes. V'inehu ro'a adam shenigash l'pekid choysim lo al niyar kol shehu u'mekabel molech ofnayim shtar shel kasef. He sees a fellow who goes up to the window, and whatever happens, some type of exchange, and he walks away with what? With many bills, right? A stack, a wad of bills. And he says, wow, this guy, look at all that money he just got. U'me'idach ro'a adam acher, he sees another person walk into the bank, holding a stack of bills, and he hands it over to the teller, who records the transaction, and the fellow walks out empty-handed. So also adam shemei olam lo ra'a bank choishiv la'atzmo shezeh achron shemaser es kaspo hu adam shayachayev l'shalim es chovosav. So this simpleton who's never been to the bank before, he knows what money is, but he's never been to the bank before, figures, oi, Nebuch, this guy, you saw how much money he handed over to the teller. He must have a lot of debts to this person. He must owe them a lot of money. And his heart is filled with compassion for this fellow. The poor guy, look how much money he had to give up. And what about that other fellow who came in empty-handed and took so much out of the bank? Wow, he must be a very special person, a very wealthy person, a very important person. But says the Pnei Menachem, of course the opposite is actually true. Of Nama MSE, Shemi Shekibel Esa Kesef, Hu Ani Maskein, Shayetzarech Dachuf Esa Kesef, Vahalach La Bank, La Kabal Halva. The person who came into the bank and took out all that money, it must be he's going through a tough time, he needs a sizable loan, or maybe he's drawing money out of his bank account, his dwindling bank account, Vahu Asid Lishalim Es Halva, and he's going to have to really pay, and when he pays, it's going to be with interest. And more interest and more interest. Viluzesh Masaras Kaspal the bank, but the person who deposited money in the bank, he must be a truly wealthy person. He must be bringing in so much money, right, that he can't even keep it in his home. He can't even keep it in his wallet. He needs to store it, safekeeping in the bank. So he's the one who's truly wealthy, and he's putting it in the bank to collect from the bank, to make interest on all of that money that he's depositing in the bank. He's the one who's marviach ala kesef hazeh tavin v'tiklin. He's the tkilin. He's the one who's going to be making interest. So says the Pnei Menachem to this father, sitting there mourning his young daughter. Hu adavar gam b'inyan no razeh shal shikul banim rachmanu litzlan. Yes, I know there's probably nothing more painful in the world than a parent losing a child, a young child. But says the Pnei Menachem, you deposited your child, so to speak, back in the bank. Obviously, right now, the pain that you must be in is noyra va'ayom, is the most painful thing in the world. But realize that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is collecting from you, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking from you, so to speak, you're going to collect much more when the time comes to withdraw your money from the bank. Right? Realize that again, a superficial perspective, you could see the whole scenario backwards. But realize, Hashem is the Makor HaTov. The thing that's most painful in your life must be the biggest bracha of all in disguise. as we know from many, many tzaddikim. The biggest brachos of the Torah are found in the biggest curses in the Torah. The tochacha, the harshest words of Bechukosai Kisavo, those are the biggest brachos in the Torah for those who have eyes to see in the deep way. So now we come back to the cave that formed the greatest, the deepest teacher of Torah in Jewish history, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Me'ata nuchal lachzor lezemer moishav toiv yashavta. Let's come back to Rabbi Shimon's cave, that a tzaddik about 500 years ago wrote a song. Rabbi Shimon Levi wrote a beautiful song, Bar Yochai. Right, it's arranged alphabetically. So this is the second moishav tov mem. It's written according to his name, Shimon. So it's in the second stanza, mem. Moishav tov yashavta. You sat in a good cave. What's so good about the cave? Hine bechazal amru b'meseches Shabbos. B'maisa de Rashbi, Shekesher Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair Raz B'sarash Rabbi Shimon, Chosno, Shayamole B'bekoyim B'sadokim Achmas Achol Shayim Miskasabo. The end of the story is that when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai comes out of the cave, and Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, his son-in-law, takes him to the bathhouse, and he sees how cracked his skin is from sitting for years and years and years sitting in the sand, and he starts to cry, and the tears are dripping down onto Rabbi Shimon's flesh, his cracked flesh, and it stings, and he sees the pain on Rabbi Shimon's face, and he says, "Oi, it's so painful to see you like this. After everything you went through in that cave, 12 years, you know, you're sitting in captivity for 12 years. No Shabbos, no Pesach, no nothing, no Sukkot. What did you have in that place? It was just you and your son. You had nothing. You had no food. You had no, right? You were so malnourished after all those years." And his son-in-law, Rav Pinchas ben Yair, cries out, "Oi, oi, lisher yisicha b'kach! It pains me so to see you, Rabbi Shimon. It pains me to see you like this." And of course, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, with his deep eyes, says back to his son-in-law, "What are you talking about? Ashurecha, ashurecha to see me like this. Shilmali lo yisani b'kach lo matzasi b'kach. Had you not seen me like this, I would never have become this. What's this?" Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, "I never would have become who I became had I not gone through that difficult period. Nimsa she'osa moshav. So that dwelling place, shebe'ene basar v'dam, that piece of real estate, which in the eyes of human beings, of flesh and blood, would have been, not worth all that much. Nira be'emes kemoshav hafach mitov begashvias ruchnias. The physical eye tells us, this place, it's no good. It's not good in Gashmias, it's not good in Ruchnias. No one would ever want to buy such a piece of land. Kefisha amarnu she'ein bo lo ora, lo achila, lo sheina, lo minyan, lo kriyas haTorah. It was dark, there was no food, he couldn't sleep comfortably. There was no minyan, there was no davening, there was no kriyas haTorah. But dafka, Rabbi Shimon walks out of that cave. And it's Rav Pinchas ben Yair. Rav Pinchas ben Yair is no lightweight. Rav Pinchas ben Yair is the one who Yisharim is built around. Rav Pinchas ben Yair was a chassid. Rav Pinchas ben Yair was a tzaddik, a heilig tana. And Rav Pinchas ben Yair looks at his face, "Yay, that cave destroyed you." And he says, "What are you talking about? That cave made me. Dafka makom zehu shagarm lo l'rashmi asar amara. Dafka, in that painful, constricted place of the cave. Shal yidei tsar gadol zeh zocha rashmi lalos me'amailos ramos kol kach. It was dafka in that place that I climbed up so many madrigos. Ad shedarcho nigla or toyas hazara kadosh. Until from that place emerged the light of the Zohar kadosh." And about the Zohar it says, "Bahai chibura dilach, di'iu sefer hazara yifkun beim in galusa barachai." That through this chibur, that through this writing, through this sefer, that is called the sefer Zohar, Yifkun bei min galusa, you'll be able to leave. Klal Yisrael will leave galus berachme, with kindness and compassion. So I know you think that life in the cave was a terribly difficult experience. But Rabbi Shimon says, no, it was a rachmanis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put me in a place where I could sprout, where I could grow. And that, about that we sing, Moishav Tov Yashavta. Chevra, the avodah of Lag BaOmer is developing deep eyes. To have a recognition, like Ibn Ezra, I didn't understand when he was living it, but we understand looking back that he was the one who was the fortunate one. And those two fellows fighting over the sum of money, Right? Neither one would actually leave their mark on the world. Niska de Rabbi Abba, where Yeshua of Kutna said to those two fellows fighting over a piece of land, you think the land belongs to you, you think the land belongs to you, but guess what, Chevra? The land belongs to neither of you. It belongs to Hashem, and you're missing the whole point. Again, a person of deep eyes understands that it's kedai for a person to go through a quarantine, to sit, so to speak, in our own miniature little version of the dark cave. But if you're paying close attention, if you're getting the message, you come out so much better. Concludes the Tolna Rebbe, the final couple of paragraphs. V'zeh limud l'chol adam ba'asher hu. And again, he wrote this piece, Mamish, it's speaking to us. This is an important limud for us, for every person, wherever one finds oneself. Sh'ka'asher HaKadosh Baruch Hu negalgel l'pischo inyonim ke'elum. When Hashem sends your way, so to speak, He sends to your doorway, He rolls to your doorway, these types of things. These and the like. Shebein basar vedam nirim sheheim hefechatov. When you go through things in life which appear to be what? The opposite of that which is good. Biyacholto lafoch es osam ha'anyanim letov. With the right perspective, you're able to what? Transform darkness into light. Constriction into expansiveness. Suffering into growth. Into creation. Into new birth. Biyacholto lafoch es osam ha'anyanim letov. Like it says in the Zohar, she'ein or there is no true light, el hayotze mitoch choshech, except for a light that emerges from darkness. Right, a light in the dark is so much brighter than a light in the day. Ve'ein tov el hayotze mitoch hara, and only through difficulty, only through harshness, can the truest kindness emerge. It's very paradoxical. But those are the eyes of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Meir. That whole base medrash was a world of learning how to see deep. Delays nahora alahu denafik migo chashucha. That there is no nahora, there's no true light, except for that which is nafik, that comes out against choshech. V'les pulchana dekutra brichu ela migo chashucha. There can be no true service of Hashem, except for a service of Hashem that what? That comes from what? That comes from darkness, that comes from constriction. V'leis tova elamigo bisha. And there's no good, there's no true good, except against a backdrop of disgrace, of embarrassment, of suffering. Amnan anu hametsuyim kvar b'dor shamashiach. But says the Tolna Rebbe, ends with a tefillah. We're living already in that generation where we're supposed to what? No longer be sitting in the cave, we're supposed to be coming out into the light. Tzvichem anu liros es Yeshua kvar. It's time for us to... It's time for us already to... It's enough already, in other words. It's time for us to see the Yeshua. V'kvar ein lanu shos l'ishtaos l'iros asanahora da'asim yigo chashucha. It's enough already, right? It's time to come out of the cave. Ki ata kvar tzvicha ora l'heir lanu l'tov for us and for all of Klal Yisrael amein kein yiratzon. Okay, so he ends with the tefila. A tefila to Hashem that, you know, we've been in the cave long enough, it's time to see the light. However, this is the lesson of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Yes, we sing Moishav Tov Yashavta. It was good. It was worth it. It was worth it. All the suffering was worth it. All right, my friends, it's a deep lesson. I hope you enjoyed it. I sent you a copy of it. You can hold on to it for future years to review. But we thank the Tolna Rebbe Shlita from Eretz Yisrael for his beautiful Torah.